Session number 15479, Reel 4.
Mr. Day, Reel 4.
The trip out was made interesting by seeing other attacks taking place. There was one at Mannheim and another at a place called Zeitz. There was 10 tenths thin cloud over the target. We bombed the glow of the reds rather than, you know, the direct indicator, and we could just see it glowing through the thin cloud. There was light, inaccurate flak. The return tip, very tiring. We used to be given pills to try and keep us awake on these trips. Wakey-wakey pills, we called them. I believe they were Benzedrine. And you can imagine taking off, say, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, sometimes 10 o'clock at night, and then flying right through the night, and all the adrenaline of a target, over the target. There was a reaction then on the way back, and you'd be very tired. We didn't have dual control on the Lancasters. The Air Force policy at this time, they'd done away with co-pilots. So it was just the one pilot on board, and they were not very successful producing an automatic pilot. In fact, on all the Lancasters in our squadron, the automatic pilot, George as he was called, was wire locked off. We couldn't use it. Some people occasionally would break a wire and try and engage it, and when the aircraft went into a vicious dive, it rapidly disengaged it. So it was one pilot hand flying in all these conditions at night. You can imagine how tiring it would be. So invariably on the return flight we would take one of these pills to try and keep us awake.
What was the idea of preventing you using George?
Well, it just didn't work. It was, you know, it was a very crude arrangement. The gyros which were incorporated in the equipment were air driven, and you had to move a lever into one position where it spun up these gyros, and then you moved it into the second position where it was supposed to engage the autopilot. But all it seemed to do was produce a vicious dive or a vicious climb or anything other than what you wanted it to do. And I think the RAF realized by this time that they were so unreliable, they were more dangerous than the worth of them, so they wire-locked them all off. So, and as I say, they did away with co-pilots, so it was all up to us. I think I forgot to mention on trip 11, the previous one to Munich, it was 9 hours and 25 minutes, which is a long time to be flying an aircraft manually through the night with all the tension and stress. Now this trip, I am on.
You are on number 12.
That's right, yes, yes. The return trip, very tiring. George US and the aircraft very heavy on the controls. Light flak disturbed the track at many places. Fighter flares over the channel. We were number one to land back at base. And that was 8 hours and 55 minutes. It was there were 200 aircraft and 5 group, and no losses. I might have forgotten to mention on the previous raid, the Munich raid, that out of 210 we lost 5. Trip number 13, February the 19th, 1945.
Where was trip number 12 to?
Brooks, the largest oil plant in Germany.
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, and number 13 was to?
Number 13 is Böhlen, another oil refinery. B-O-H-L-E-N.
Which date?
February the 19th. We had one 4,000-pound bomb and 14 500-pounders, a 5-group normal, 270 aircraft. Met forecasts gave the highest tops of low cloud as 4,000 feet. But as we climbed through, we eventually encountered the tops at 6,000 feet on the way out. The target had been forecast to be cloudless, but when we got there, there were layers of cloud up to 15,000 feet. And on top of everything else, the controller was shot down. We didn't see the target indicators, so all we could do was bomb the flak bursts. The flak was light, bursting at 10,000 and 15,000. Our Loran, which is another form of navigation aid with a longer range than G, that we couldn't get in a reception. So we were flying dead reckoning for 3 hours, but we were still only 14 miles off track when we got back in G range. Uneventful return trip, very tiring. It was half light on return, and I made a heavy landing. 8 hours and 15 minutes, only one aircraft lost. Trip number 14 was on the 22nd of February. Gravenhorst, which is on the Mittelland Canal. We had 14,000 pounders. Again, a 5-group trip, only 140 aircraft. A daylight takeoff. We were fired at on the way out. And there was light flak and fighter flares along the track. The winds swung round, causing us to be late. And we had to fly the last 20 minutes to the target at full power. That's 2,850 revs and plus 9 inches of mercury boost. The target was very well marked, no results seen. Our bombs carried a half-hour delay, so we didn't see any bomb bursts. We had a good photograph. We saw many aircraft shot down by fighters on the return. There was light flak in the Rhine area. The mid-upper gunner suddenly said that there was a UCAS 88 crossing ahead of us. Then it flew underneath us. So I said, well, open up. So we, the mid-upper and the tail gunner opened fire. And we corkscrewed. That's a maneuver which we take when we're attacked by an aircraft. And it didn't look as if this aircraft, this Junkers 88, was going to go into an attack. So I suddenly said, well, let's chase him. So off we went, gave chase, and this time the front gunner, the bomb aimer, used to go into the front turret on the way out to the target and back. He was a front gunner, you see, when he wasn't bomb aiming. So he went into the front turret and fired away, and I thought I saw a flash on the side of this aircraft. But that was all. And then we lost it, and then we resumed track and landed safely at base.
I've never heard of a bomber chasing.
No. And there was a follow-up to this. You know, intelligence reports come through, and a few weeks later, we were acknowledged as having damaged the Junkers 88.
Why did you decide to do it?
Well, he wasn't chasing us, so I thought we'll chase him. It might well have turned out that he was on a training exercise. Perhaps he didn't have any ammunition. I don't know. But we saw it. It was flying. He was enemy. So we attacked. Yeah, and probably one of the few occasions of a Lancaster being able to claim he damaged an enemy aircraft. But it's there in the official records. And the losses were very heavy on that trip. We lost 13 out of 140. 9 or 10%. Trip 15 on the 24th of February, the Dortmund Ems Canal at Ladbergen, 14 1,000-pound bombs, again with a half-hour delay. This was a daylight, and it's a five-group raid. Unlike the Americans, who flew in a sort of loose formation, Bomber Command had very little experience of daylight flying, practically no experience of formation flying. So it was what we call a gaggle. That was the more or less official expression that was used, where you just sort of flew in a roughly in formation, but not in a tight formation. And that was called a gaggle. There were 160 aircraft. We set course over base at 10,000 feet. No cloud, good visibility. Crossed the Dutch coast at 14,000 feet. But at this time, there was 9/10 stratocumulus. And shortly after crossing the coast, 5 to 10 miles inland, it became 10/10. The gaggle was a hopeless shambles. The VHF was US over the target, and we could see that no one was bombing. We were briefed not to bomb on G, so we set course for base. We had an escort of Mustangs. There was very little flak over the target area, and we landed safely back at base. After landing, getting out of the aircraft, it always took a bit of time, you know, by the time you had stowed everything away and shut everything down. So most of the crew were off the aircraft, and I was just getting out of the cockpit, and there was a God Almighty explosion. Didn't know what it was, but it was a tremendous bang. And this turned out to be there were two squadrons at Skellenthorpe, 50, the one I was on, and 61 squadron, and this turned out to be a 61 squadron aircraft that blew up. I was explaining earlier on about these little propellers on the
bombs.
On the bombs. Now, because we didn't bomb, we had to jettison over the North Sea. And in our case, we reckon we'd only be slightly above all-up weight. So we were one of the first aircraft back at base. We didn't jettison anything. This particular aircraft had jettisoned bombs. And what they reckon must have happened was that one of these little propellers had unwound for some reason. They shouldn't, because there's a pin attached to the aircraft and attached to the bomb. And as it drops away from the aircraft, It pulls this pin out and enables the little propeller to unwind. But they reckon that this one of these pins must have been out of position. The propeller unwound. There were half-hour delay bombs, and half an hour later, it blew up. But by this time, of course, it had landed, and the crew had gone, left the aircraft. But what, unfortunately, the armourers had come to remove the remaining bombs, and a couple of them were killed. But I'll never forget that bang. Four ground crew were killed, actually. It was quite a bang. And the next day, they had everybody out on the squadron, out on the airfield, literally everybody they could muster, and had them all lined up, shoulder to shoulder, walking the entire airfield, picking up little bits of aircraft so that they wouldn't burst tires and things. Was one aircraft lost on that raid out of 160. Trip 16 on the 3rd of March, Dortmund-Ems Canal again at Ladbergen. 14,000 pound bombs with a half hour delay. Let me see. Yes, this was a couple of weeks after this incident with the 61 Squadron aircraft, and it was at that briefing when the CO said, now you're carrying half-hour delay bombs, and if you are recalled, I want you to jettison normally. And I looked round and I could see everybody was looking at themselves and saying, like hell, we'd rather bring them back than go through that exercise again, the possibility of a bomb going off. We were supposed to leave at 10 o'clock, but the departure was delayed. The raid had been scrubbed, as we called it, probably because of weather over the target, and it was on again and off again, and eventually we got off. A trip out, uneventful, approaching the target, dozens of SLs on the ground. Can't remember what SL stands for. Shining at about searchlights. Oh, that's right, dozens of searchlights on the ground, shining at about 45 degrees. Probably, in inverted commas, artificial moonlight for the army. So this was obviously in an area where we were overflying the army, and these searchlights were being lit to light up the army on the ground. The target was marked fairly well. The Germans at this stage were lighting artificial target indicators. You know, they'd set off a red fire or a green fire miles away in the hope of putting us off. And we saw plenty of these. There was 8/10 cloud, fortunately broken right over the target. There was moderate light and heavy flak. We bound and got a good photograph. We saw half a dozen aircraft go down, and two parachutes came from one. The return trip was uneventful.
Does that mean that you weren't deceived by these German decoys?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. Because all the time, you see, there'd be a controller in his Mosquito, and he'd say, ignore those, or ignore the others, or ignore the red ones, or bomb this side of whatever ones he wanted you to bomb from. Or supposing the Pathfinders had dropped red markers near the target, And then as soon as the red markers were dropped, the Germans would write light red ones a couple of miles away. Then the controller would go in and drop another colour close to the originals. So he'd say, bomb the ones with a yellow marker in the middle of them, or something like that. When we got back to base, we were warned that there were enemy aircraft in the area, intruders in the base area. I was at Skellingthorpe, which was just outside Lincoln, and then about 10 miles or so to the south, on the main road south of Lincoln, was Waddington, and that was the main base. We were attached administratively to Waddington, and these aircraft strafed Waddington. The enemy aircraft went in and shot up Waddington, probably hoping to shoot Lancasters out of the sky on when they were coming into land. And they hit a pyrotechnic store at Waddington. So that must have been colourful. We managed to land just before the lights were put out. I made a note here, subsequently, target identified by a green Wanganui, that's a special kind of target indicator, with red stars and green TIs. So the in this case, you see, the controller must have dropped red stars after the German spoofs were lit. And we bombed northwest of the red with a 3 seconds overshoot. ...180 aircraft, lost 12. That was quite a nasty night. Trip 17, synthetic oil plant again at Bolin, March the 5th, 1945. One 4,000 pounder and 14 500 pounders. This time my engineer was sick, so I took Sergeant Fox. Trip out uneventful. The weather very bad. Cloud up to 14,000 feet, lots of ice in. Very little flak over the target. 7/10 of cloud, bombed visually from the light of large explosions. Saw a few aircraft shot down. We got off track to starboard on return, and we got hit by flak in 10 places over Karlsruhe. And the rest of the trip was uneventful, landed safely at base. Now this was a 9-hour, 55 hours trip, and obviously I'd been very tired on the way back, and I'd actually dozed off. When you're flying, especially on the return flight, you're weaving. You're flying a particular coast for a few minutes, 5 minutes, and then left 5 minutes, and then two rights 5 minutes, sort of 10 degrees different each time, or 10 to 20 degrees. So that if you're being tracked on the ground, and they try to predict where you're going to be when they send up anti-aircraft fire, hopefully you've turned off and it won't hit you. But on this occasion, not only did I doze off, but the navigator dozed off, so he hadn't given me the change of course. So we were over Karlsruhe, and they'd tracked us and got us and hit us. So we were damn lucky not to be shot out of the sky. Just the tail was peppered. And our navigator was Alan Murray, was Karlsruhe Murray ever after that. Trip 18, March the 7th, Harburg, synthetic oil plant again. One 4,000 pounder, 14 500 pounders, 240 aircraft. The trip out as far as the Danish coast was uneventful. Over Denmark, many searchlights, light and heavy flak, and fighter flares. Considerable light and heavy flak from Kiel onwards. We were the first over the target on the supporting run, but 30 searchlights caught us. We had a hell of a job getting out of there. Once you're caught by searchlights, I mean, you think you're doing these very violent maneuvers, but to somebody on the ground, you're hardly moving. And so it's very easy for them to keep you in their trapped in the beam. And I threw that aircraft all over the sky and dived it and climbed it, and eventually we got away. But it was quite a hairy few minutes. We were caught three times by a searchlight, but only once they held on to us. We were late coming onto the bombing heading. We saw many very large explosions from the target. It appeared to be a complete success. We saw 9 or 10 aircraft shot down by fighters between the target and the coast coming back. Considerable flak and searchlights to port and starboard crossing the coast. Landed safely back at base. And out of the 240 aircraft, we lost 13. March the 12th, trip 19, Dortmund. I took Sergeant Fox again as my flight engineer. Trip out uneventful. Very hot, I've marked. That was the other thing, of course, about flying Lancaster in the winter. There was a rudimentary heater of sorts. Ducting was carried over the exhaust. Not over the exhaust so much as over the aircraft radiators, the port inner engine. And then it was ducted into the aircraft. It came in fairly close to the wireless operator's position, so he had quite a bit of benefit from that. It then drifted forward a little bit, so the navigator got a little bit of benefit from it, but it was hopeless by the time it got up to the pilot and the rear gunners. The mid-upper gunner and the rear gunner, of course, had electrically heated suits. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4 out of 7 didn't suffer too badly. 2 with electrically heated suits and 2 from the heating, the crude heating. But then the bomb aimer was in the front turret, as I said before, and the pilot and the engineer really suffered from the cold. It was bitterly cold. We had 2 flying suits, what they call an inner and an outer. The inner suit was KPOC line. It was something like